We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
In the Know, the Bourbon Street Shots Podcast. It's all Pelicans, all the time.
And welcome to the first show in a long time. I've been being a slacker. I don't really have any excuse for you. I just have not been recording podcasts for you. I'm a terrible person. So to make up for it, I decided to bring in Jake Madison, part of the Bourbon Street Shots family. He's a great follow on Twitter, if you enjoy Twitter. Jake, how you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm excited to do this today.
Yeah. Yeah, and we're coming right off of Mardi Gras, too. So I'm sure you've been having a great day today.
I mean, we're recording this on Tuesday. I'm assuming it's going up Wednesday. And it's been a long day. I think if you follow me on Twitter, you saw my face was painted for most of the day, and I've finally washed it off so that if we get kind of depressed on the podcast, the tears aren't going to, like, run the paint down onto my couch and just make an even bigger mess than it is right now.
Yeah. Yeah, and I guess since the last podcast, there's been a lot of sadness about this team. Because at the last podcast, we were coming off, and basically we had just had that long homestand. Everybody was feeling at least okay. Not, like, great, but at least okay. You'd had a bunch of games in there where they'd won by 15 or 16 or 17 points. And then they got smacked by Memphis and San Antonio and the Los Angeles Lakers and Cleveland. And reality has kind of set in. And even though they turned back around and punched Minnesota.
It's Minnesota.
It is Minnesota, like, and that Lakers game kind of stands out in the middle in a really obscene, horrible way. Although I will say this, the last time there was a Lakers game that the Pelicans lost, I had to immediately have a wrath cast afterwards. I didn't feel, I mean, it was still, I was annoyed, but I didn't feel quite as furious, and I think acceptance has just settled in. Are you to the point of acceptance? Is this just a pretty bad team?
Yeah, I think it is. And to be honest, when they had that big homestand and they were doing pretty well, and I think they got a lot of people's hopes up, I kind of was less optimistic than most because they were playing at home. They were playing, you know, the Kings, who are a wreck, just probably emotionally there. Brooklyn, you were playing, you know, just not good teams. The Bucks, the Nets, other, you know, teams like that. And To me, it just didn't show me that this was a team that, okay, has finally arrived until I saw them do that against serious competition. And, you know, losing to Memphis, the Spurs, the Cavs in three of the four games. Those are the teams you need to beat to kind of show me that, like, I can give you the benefit of the doubt now, and maybe it was just a bad start to the year with the injuries. And then that Laker game, which I know you're not too upset about, but what was it? In that game, I think only three people scored in double figures. That's yep. not... Like, I don't know what you want to say other than maybe this team's just bad. Sometimes it's just that simple, and we don't need to try and find excuses for it, and they're just bad.
So do you give the injury excuses any credit anymore? Because I did tweet out after that Lakers game, I updated a picture I posted earlier in the season where I had all the guys who were injured crossed out in their depth charts. And earlier in the season, it was pretty horrific what we were looking at. But we're still missing essentially three starters from this team. We're missing Quincy Pondexter, Tyreke Evans, and Eric Gordon. And if this team was fully healthy, that is your starting point guard, shooting guard, and small forward. Does that weigh at all in your mind, or do you at this point don't care?
No, I mean it does to an extent, but at a certain point you've just got to kind of move on. And the bigger part of that is against the Kings team when Davis sat out and he wasn't playing against Boogie Cousin, you were missing, I think it was 73 points from your starting lineup, which yep. is a lot of points. And they still went out and won, and they played hard that game. Their rotations and things like that on defense, at least, I'm not talking about like minutes and stuff, was really good. But when you look at these games and we're over halfway through the season, some of these mistakes just shouldn't be happening. And I know we're going to get into this in a little bit with Gentry and things like that. And that's kind of where, like, okay, I can't do it anymore. I can't keep giving you excuses because you miss a rotation on defense has nothing to do with the people that are out of the lineup. You just need to know what's going on. And right. you shouldn't be making some of these really dumb passes. You shouldn't be, you know, doing kind of the mistakes they're making, just the absolute lack of awareness on defense and things like that. That's stuff that even a backup should know to do, and they're not doing it. So injuries to me aren't going to – yeah, if you can't score a ton of points, yes, you're missing a lot of people. I'm going to cut you some slack on that. But a lot of the other mistakes, I can't do it anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, so – before we jump to Gentry, because I want to talk about Gentry for a little while, let's of these games, which was the best win? So, like, this last podcast was right before Houston, and so we had a 1-point loss to Houston. We beat Sacramento by 9. We beat the Brooklyn by 2.
It's not going to be that one.
Wow. Then we lost to Memphis by 15, San Antonio by 13, LA by 3. I'm sure you could pick that one as the best game. Cleveland by 15, and then we beat Minnesota by 14. So if you had to pick from that set of games, which one did you walk away from probably feeling the best?
I mean, honestly, I'm not going to pick the Minnesota game. That's a team they should beat, even kind of, you know, down a couple people. It's without a doubt that Kings game. You had no one who could basically guard Cousins in that game, and they went out and they kind of shut him down really well. Ryan Anderson went off. You saw this team, you know, Cole had 10 assists. Oshik grabbed 13 rebounds when he has no business doing that in that game, especially with how he's played this year. And that was a game where they're missing so many people. You know, like I said, 73 points. Would you fault the team for mailing that one in? No, yeah, probably not. And they went out and they played hard. And you don't see that every game, even when they're fully healthy, and then they come out against the team, you know, a couple nights later against Brooklyn that they should – that's the team they should win by 15 points against. And they win by 2 at home, barely. So I think that's the game where it kind of gives you just a glimpse that if this team was actually clicking on all cylinders, which they are far, far from, it would give you hope going forward, and then they go and wreck that hope in the next couple of games, like, immediately.
Yeah. Yeah, I will say this, you know, we were missing a lot of players, but Sacramento was missing Rudy Gay.
I feel like I should laugh at this.
is that actually a negative for them?
It's not a negative. I mean, that's a guy who won. I'm not looking at his numbers right now, but I want to say he scores like 18 points a game. That's also significant. Absolutely, it's not the 73 that the Pelicans were missing.
I actually think he's down to like 14 this season, and he's shooting pretty poorly. And I will confess, and I think it was either right before or right after this, there was a report that the Pelicans called up Sacramento, and offered Eric Gordon for Rudy Gay.
I mean, would you do that trade just based off that? I'm kind of curious.
So in a moment of weakness, I actually went on Twitter and said, I'd probably do this.
I mean,
and
go ahead.
Then I actually went and looked at the contract situation. There's no chance in hell. No way would I trade. Like, Rudy Gay is, I was, the way I was thinking of it was, you know, hey, Rudy Gay, he'll be on the team next year. I thought he only had 1 year left in his contract, and, you know, he's a better fit than Gordon with the other guys on the team. We'd finally have a small forward, and, you know, Gordon really sucks, and Rudy Gay kind of sucks. I don't know if I'd say really sucks, just kind of sucks. So kind of's better than really, so good fit kind of sucks is a better option than really sucks.
But then
I found out he's got two more seasons. He's going to be 33, and he's already declined now.
No, I mean, imagine how bad he's going to be in that last year of that deal. It's frightening, right? I mean, like you said, in a moment of weakness, like if you caught me maybe in the middle of today when I still had my face painted and I'd started at like 10 in the morning, before that even, like, I'd probably do that deal. And then you kind of look at how well this team is playing, and I mean that in, like, the loosest sense of the term, without mm-hmm. Eric Gordon, and how much better the ball movement has been without Gordon in the lineup, because that dude just kills ball movement. The second the ball touches his hand, that play is basically dead. You may as well just call it and just give the opponent the ball. And isn't it better just to let him expire and just get rid of him?
Absolutely.
Like, instead of bringing someone else in?
I would even say this, and this isn't the case, but even if the Pelicans were right there at the salary cap and letting him go meant they could sign nobody else, like they didn't even get salary cap, which isn't the case this year because, of course, the salary cap is going up, but I would still just let Eric Gordon walk. Like,
100%.
I don't even think bringing him back, like it's not even like Omer Asik. I actually talked myself into that contract over the summer because it's kind of like, well, you know, we have to have a center, and you know, I didn't like the amount of money that was given. It was obviously an overpay, but there was nobody else the Pelicans could have gone if they had said Asik leave and we're going to just sign the next. They would only have like $3 or $4 million to spend on a center at that point, and That's not enough to replace Asik. So I'd rather go over the cap and overspend and keep Asik. I wouldn't do that for Eric Gordon. Not a chance. Eric Gordon, goodbye. See you later.
No, and he showed up to one of our watch parties one time, and I actually had like a really nice time talking to him. And he told some like funny stuff, and he showed he's not like a, you know, this emotionalist robot that only frowns. And no, just get rid of him.
I don't think it's even frown. It's kind of the whiny face.
I mean, it looks like it's a robot trying to fake being upset because it doesn't understand real human emotions to me.
That's actually a really good description,
like,
of it.
The picture when he was introduced and his face was this robot, I was like, I don't know where I am and what's going on, but I should be upset because I'm not in Los Angeles. And, like, robot doesn't care about palm trees and sun.
Right.
And beaches. They rust in that.
Yeah. Huh? Well, all right, so let me give you the game that I actually liked the most, and it's going to be a little bit of a surprise. I actually really thought the San Antonio game, I thought that was the best one.
That's kind of even surprising to me, not the Houston game.
Yeah, even though we lost by 13, they played San Antonio really well up until the last 5 minutes. They fought. They were right there. It was like a 3-point game with 5 minutes left in there. And San Antonio did then just throw in their premier set of five players. And Ryan Anderson busting poor Manu Ginobili's testicle didn't happen soon enough to save the Pelicans. that's so bad.
That's for another podcast.
Yeah.
Breaking that down.
Like, I just felt like they did everything you needed to up until the 5-minute mark, and then they got ran off the floor a little bit, but then it was San Antonio's best five. This is one of the best teams in the league, and the Pelicans were having to make decisions. Well, hey, does Dante Cunningham come in and help us and try? But if he gets switched off on LaMarcus Aldridge, he gets destroyed, or do we have Ryan Anderson come in and Kawhi Leonard destroys him? Like, these are the decisions that we were having to make because we had no healthy 2E players to put in there. But that was also the game which just set me off in my mind about Alvin Gentry. And I need to put this out there so everybody remembers and understands. I never turned fully on Monty in my mind. At no point did I ever think Monty isn't a good coach. He needs to go. Even when we were having like decisions and Michael was like 100%, yeah, we if you decide Monty's not the future, we need to replace him with who we think will be the future. I was never like fully on board with that. I thought Monty had issues here and there with his rotations, but almost every coach does. And I felt like he did a pretty good job otherwise. I'm 100% against Gentry at this point. Like I'm done. And I know it's unfair because of all the issues he's had to deal with his team and health and injury, but I just feel like he is not putting this team in position to succeed.
Oh, those are the killer words for a coach too.
Right. And like, unlike Byron Scott, like who is in Los Angeles and he is brought there to make that team suck. So really he's doing his job. Alvin Gentry was brought here to make this team good.
You know, so I wonder, and this is the interesting thing, and also it's not like it sounds like we've talked about this and we had a plan for the podcast and what we wanted to discuss with that segue to it. But, you know, you've got to look at this. And so what do you think this year the biggest issues with the team are? If you could say pick your – what's your number one thing? Let's go there first.
My number one thing is that Alvin Gentry – the one thing I would have him fix is he needs to actually take a look at what talent he has available at any one point and put the best players on the floor at the most important times. And I think he puts the players he feels fits his system the best on the floor at any given time, whether they're the best players he has available or not. And that is my number one biggest gripe with how this team goes. I 100% believe that Omer Asik right now, because of all the injuries, is the fourth best player available on this team, and he plays like 15 minutes a game. It's insane.
No, and I don't disagree with you on that. I think my biggest thing, and from talking with people within the team, this has kind of been echoed to me, and Gentry said it a lot in his pregame and postgame and practice interviews, is effort and hustle and kind of not having this hunger. And I think part of it is, look how many different guys on this team kind of got paid this offseason. You have Davis, you have Asik, you have Ajinsa. Tony Douglas got a fully guaranteed deal before the year started. I don't know where that one came from. You have Alonzo G getting his first real, like, guaranteed money. Dante Cunningham, after being out of the league for most of half of last season, got paid. And you have all these kind of guys getting paid, and I don't think Gentry's keeping them hungry enough, as he should. And I think that it might work if those guys were playing with some more effort than you've seen out there. And, I mean, it's pretty obvious when they're not. You can't hide not having effort. You can rewatch the game the next day, and you can see it. And I think, to me, that's the biggest thing. But that also falls on the coach. You've got to keep your guys motivated. And they have kind of a master motivator on their assistant coaching – one of their assistant coaches. And I'm, of course, blanking on names as I've been doing all night.
You mean Ehrman? Or?
Not Ehrman. I can
look. Benson?
Phil Weber. Sorry. It's Phil Weber.
Okay.
And they're not keeping these guys motivated. If you all want a great laugh – type into YouTube Phil Weber and watch his, like, YouTube motivational speeches. And, like, listening to him talk to these players as they just have their pregame shoot-around where they're just shooting shots to get in the rhythm, the way he's trying to motivate them is so interesting and, like, so much positivity, and it's just not carrying over to games. And if all these guys just got paid and they don't want to play hard, like, what can you do?
So, I mean, there is something nebulous going on here, though, because, like, we can say play hard, and, you know, of course, Gentry says that a lot, and there are times where definitely the general energy of the team feels a little low, and that's actually kind of normal over the course of a long season. You'll have some games where people are just, they're tired, they're grinding it out, and they just don't have the energy, but, like, do you think it's like a general team, like the whole team is
just
like
100%?
Because, like, when, to me, Dante feels like he gives 100% of his energy when he's out there.
So it depends on how high level you want to go up with it. If I think there's a general, say, malaise throughout this team because they thought this year was going to kind of be easy for him. I mean, they made the playoffs under kind of adversity last year. It took a lot of luck and kind of a fluke Davis three-pointer, if you want to boil it down to that, to make the playoffs. And I think they thought, okay, the entire team's back. We're going to be healthy. We have a new head coach. Maybe they bought into the hype a little bit. I just thought this was going to be easy. They were going to cakewalk into the sixth or seventh seed, let's say. And I don't think they were ready for the adversity they faced this year at all. I don't think they were well prepared for that. And I mean, you know, I say this based off what I've seen, based off talking to players even with it, talking to coaches. You know, I'm at every game. I'm at practices. So I kind of think I have a decent pulse of the team in trying to get it. And I just don't think that kind of hunger has been there. And that's been echoed through Gentry's pregame, postgame practice stuff and other things I've been told. And I mean, there was even, well, I forget what game it was. And we got to interview Davis at practice the next day. And it was the one where Gentry chewed him out, I think, in like the third quarter in one of the games. And then Davis came roaring out after that because he was pissed that his coach yelled at him. And we had, you know, it, Gentry, I think, had basically said he had been dogging it. And I forget which reporter did, asked Davis if he thought he was dogging it. And Davis basically started to admit that, yes, I was dogging it. And then he caught himself and stopped. But you could see he was about to say, like, yeah, I wasn't trying hard. And if I think that goes to show how kind of relevant it is to this team, because if you have your star player talking to media where it's being streamed live and he's about to admit he's not playing hard and he didn't even think going into that that would be a bad thing to say.
Right.
I mean, what is? I think that kind of tells you the mindset you need to know. I don't know if I fully buy into the whole Davis isn't a leader aspect of things fully, but I think, you know, it kind of starts from him. You know, this entire team begins and ends with him to an extent, and I think there's been issues with that.
Well, there's also, whenever people talk about the league, and like I've listened to the great podcast that Waj has out now, where he had Brian Scalabrine on, and Scalabrine was talking about like going to a team with someone like Jason Kidd, who just, he's a driver and he's trying to do everything right. And that kind of sets the tone for you. Who on this team is going to set the tone?
Yeah, and I mean, you're looking at a guy like maybe Kendrick Perkins, and, but he's not playing out there. So like, what do you suppose, you can't rely on him too much to do that.
Right.
And that's
the issue. And really look across the rest of the team. Like, Do you think of Drew Holiday as a person who's going to be nose to the grindstone, making sure everybody's doing that?
I mean, a lot goes on in practices and in the locker room that we don't see, so it's kind of tough to maybe make an accurate representation of what we think. But, no, I agree with you. Based off what we can actually see in the visual evidence we have, no, it doesn't look like it. And if you go back to this being kind of a head coach issue, look where Gentry's been the past couple of years. He was in Golden State last year. Honestly, that probably was one of the easier coaching jobs of all time. I mean, you have to design the offense. But when you have a team like that, man, you and I could step in there and probably coach them to some wins.
Yeah.
You know, Luke Walton's undefeated, right, as a coach? He's going to get paid a lot of money. Man, we should have jumped in there. We'd be rich. He was in L.A. with Chris Paul, who's essentially a coach on the floor for you the year before that. And then when he was in Phoenix, he had Steve Nash who was doing it for him. And I think maybe this is, for Gentry, his big test of adversity, because he hasn't – when he's had success as a head coach or an assistant coach, he hasn't had to face something like this yet. So I know you're all – let's get – I don't know if you think we should fire him or not, let's say. But I know you're kind of against Gentry right now, and I know you want to go all bad cop on him. And we can have some fun and do that.
Absolutely.
But I think a lot of it is you – it's his first year here. You need to give him maybe a little bit for him to grow as well. And so the biggest judge of him isn't going to be this season, but it will be next season. And have you seen what you need to prove on as a head coach, and can you do it next year? It's frustrating right now because we all had high hopes for this team. We wanted to have them make the playoffs. That was kind of the expectation, and that's, I mean, pretty much out the window now. But you've got to now see, can he grow from this himself and be the actual good Pelicans head coach going forward?
So I understand, like, you want to give him more time, but
nope,
I don't.
Time.
So, well, I mean, I understand the idea is, you know, see how he functions next year, but I don't even want to give him that. Like, I am to the point where I'm just like, I don't feel like he evaluates his players properly. Like, Norris Cole.
Oh, don't get me started.
Norris Cole, by every advanced stat measure we have out there, if he's not the worst guard in the league, he's second. Like, he is awful. And, you know, he might have a game here and there where he scores suddenly 26 points, and people point to that. But for every game where he's like that, he shoots, you know, three of 14 or one of 10 from the field. And although he runs hard and he's fairly quick, his defense is abysmal. He is one of the worst pick-and-roll guards I have ever seen defensively, because he'll try to lock and trail the guy, but he never gets back into the picture.
No, and sorry, go ahead.
Terrible. So, like, and somehow Gentry feels that this is a guy he should be giving 30 minutes a night to. And I know, and he was doing that before we had the injuries. Before we had, like, when we had actual options, like, I honestly, like, I would be figuring out any way possible I could minimize the minutes that Norris Cole was being given.
You mean not trading Ish Smith for 2 second-round picks?
Well, I don't even know if I would do that, because 2 second-round picks is actually a pretty good haul for Ish Smith, especially the picks we got.
Yes, I agree with that.
And Norris Cole deserved the chance. He came back from injury. He had a pretty good end of the last season. He wasn't as amazing as we thought. And clearly, Dell Demps didn't think he was as amazing as everybody thought either, because he just sat on his restricted rights and then signed him to a one-year qualifying offer.
Like, no one thought he was as good. I mean, last year was – he played very well for the Pelicans once he came over. Like, yeah. There's no denying this. And looking at some of his numbers with it, if you go pop on certain websites, you can see it. Like, basically, the second half of last season when he was here was a fluke.
Yes,
like
100%.
He was never supposed to be that good. It was a career high in player efficiency rating. Like any other, like he shot. I'm looking at it now. Where is it? He shot 38% from three, which was by far a career high. And he had some big threes actually, but he wasn't known as a 3-point shooter. This wasn't expected, and everyone in the league saw this, and no one signed him to a long term deal.
Right, and so. I mean, but what I mean, when he comes back, like, everybody knows he's probably not as good as he was last year. But he deserves, when you come back from injury, to get like a 10-game audition to, you know, show, hey, this is what I can do. And he was awful. Especially those first 10 games. Like, even if you give him 5 games to shake off the rust, he was awful those first 10 games. And Ish Smith was gone during that stretch. Which, fine, you got a nice offer for Smith, take it, let him go. But when now you're in the situation where Norris Cole's there, go to Tony Douglas. I don't care. Like, Tony Douglas isn't as bad as Norris Cole. Tony Douglas can at least do a couple things at league average rate or better. Norris Cole can't do anything.
Yeah, I get that. But at the same point, and this is where it's tough, and this is where I think the interesting part of it is, I mean, the higher ceiling is going to be Norris Cole, so maybe you play him and hope he kind of plays up to the ceiling and gets out of this funk, even though he hasn't shown anything that, like,
will refute your higher ceiling, Norris. I don't believe that.
Douglas?
Yes.
All right, that's fair. We can disagree on things.
I would be willing to bet you that at Tony Douglas at his best is better for the Pelicans than Norris Cole at his best.
No, and Douglas has had some very good games, and the bigger thing is he kind of plays under control, where I don't feel Norris Cole does. I think maybe offensively you'd take Douglas. I still think, as bad as Cole has been, I don't think Douglas is much better than that at all. And I'd rather have the kind of more athletic guy out there. But I get what you're saying. No, it's a good point.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where you kind of look at these rotations and you're kind of like, what is he doing?
Right. And I got to understand, like, and this is the actual real decision. Like, people mistake the idea that, oh, well, Norris Cole has to play because, you know, he's a guard. But, you know, and we have a lot of injured guards. But what this team is still doing is playing guys who are wings at power positions and making sure Cole gets lots of minutes. You could actually shift those wings to the wing positions, shift some of those lesser speed wings to the guard positions, and yeah, go big. Like, that puts your best players on the floor. Yes, you're still going to have defensive issues, but this team is a 25th ranked defense in the league right now. They're not good at any point.
But they're the number ninth offense. That makes up for everything, right?
Right. Yeah. And that's actually really funny because I think those two numbers are how they finished last year, isn't it?
I forget the exact ones. I know they were top 10, and I will admit I didn't think that offense – I thought that was kind of a smoke and mirrors top 10, to be honest.
Yeah.
But, I mean, right now you'd almost wish – there are times when they play better slow.
Yeah. They finished 8-22 last year, and now they're 9-25. Yeah, it's negligible, the difference.
No, I mean, that defensive rating's also affected a little bit by playing Golden State a couple of times, playing the Spurs, what, three times already? Like,
yeah.
You know, I've heard and I've talked to a lot of coaches in the league, head coaches and assistant coaches, where a lot of teams this year aren't looking at, like, defensive rating and a lot of defensive numbers. And this is not to excuse it or anything like that. I just think it's kind of an interesting aside where they throw out a lot of those numbers because they think, like, Golden State just bombs those things.
Hmm.
Because there's a few teams that are so good offensively, and especially if you play in the West against them multiple times, that they kind of skew averages in a negative direction when maybe it's not the most accurate representation of things. But, I mean, we're also, you know, they're 19-32. You have a large enough sample size where you can say this is probably accurate.
Okay. So, I want to go off on a tangent here, but I want to just get your take on – What you're feeling right now for Gentry is like, if you are suddenly promoted to the super president of basketball operations for the New Orleans Pelicans, Mickey Loomis saw your face paint today and thought it was hot, and it's like that dude needs a job, and I think he would make Dell Demps' job easier by telling him what to do. So, Jake Madison, you are now in charge of the Pelicans. And you have Alvin Gentry sitting there, and Mickey Loomis says, you know what? We don't care that he's got a contract that goes for three more years. We don't care about anything on this team. You can trade or do whatever you want with these dudes. What is your decision on Alvin Gentry right now?
Right now.
What do you do?
I ride out the season with him. Like I said earlier, I ride out the season with him, and I give him the shortest leash possible to start next year.
Okay.
And basically, if it's not looking good – a third of the way into the season, and he's not fixing the things that you and I have just talked about and that I think he needs to fix and grow as a coach, I would boot him out that door so quickly.
Okay.
I just don't do it this season. I think you at least, you know, if we had hired him the year, but this is his second year, I'd fire him in a second. I just think that he's a smart enough guy to understand what he needs to do, and I want to give him at least a year to figure it out.
Okay. I mean, so my immediate take right now is I would let him finish out the year too, because there's nothing that's going to salvage this year. You're not going to be able to fire him and replace him with someone who's going to make this year better.
No, not at all.
And it's not like, in some respects, he's not making decisions that are injuring people's development. He's not like saying, well, Anthony Davis, you know, we don't need to develop that guy and let him play minutes.
So he's not Byron Scotting it.
He's not Byron Scotting it. Like they're, and part of that's because of what he has on this team. He's not like holding anybody
to develop guys at this point on this team. It's fully, I think, in my opinion, a win now mode. You already have your young guys who've been here for a little bit.
Exactly. So he's not harming any of that. So like, there isn't a reason to get rid of him because he's hurting the team. He's just not helping the team. So let him play the rest of the season. Go see what coaches are interested that are out there and get like more, and then if you find like Tom Thibodeau wants to come here, do it. Gentry's gone, Thibodeau, come in, please. Like, just get one of those guys who has a proven track record on the defensive side of the ball. I'm like, and I said that I was a broken record. Like, I don't want an offensive coach. I want a defensive coach, a guy who has a proven record, because we know that is the one part of the floor that coaches actually have proven ability to impact greatly. And you can't say the same for the offense necessarily. And so bring a guy in who you know rocks on the defensive end.
I want to disagree with you, but I don't really think I can. Okay. I mean, I think it's as simple as that. I kind of agree with you there. I just think, man, I don't know at times. I go back and forth on this. I mean, the other thing is we can talk in hypotheticals all day like this. The Pelicans going to pay another coach? Probably not.
Right. Probably not.
And is this team probably going to be sticking with Gentry for at least this season and probably all of next before they even entertain getting rid of him? I think that's what's actually going to happen.
Yeah, I think the only way it could happen faster is if Mickey Loomis has decided that Dempsey's season is that his role in charge of this team is over, and he empowers whoever he hires next to do whatever he feels necessary.
Yeah, that's the only way it would happen. I don't think it would go that far, to be honest. I think one of the things I've learned is the Saints and the Pelicans keep their financials entirely separate. So if the Pelicans were to happen to lose money, which, you know, we don't get to see their financials, and with the new CBA, should be kind of hard to do.
Right. Although their viewership and tickets are down.
Oh, I was tweeting about it.
Horrendously.
Horrendously. So, I mean, I can tell you for a fact that they're worried about season ticket sales. It's not a question. I don't think renewals are going quite without any seeing numbers or anything like that, just based off talking to people. I think their renewals are kind of down, and that's a concern. And I was tweeting out some of those market share numbers, let's call them, about the TV ratings. They're down like 30% from last year. They're averaging like 7,000 households or something in New Orleans watching Pelicans games. The arena is more than double that.
Wow.
That's not good. And, I mean, that's where your money comes from. It comes from season ticket sales, and it comes from TV money. Let's make no mistake. That's where the majority of revenue comes from in the NBA. And if those are down, they're not going to want to pay two coaches at the same time. So if people really want Gentry gone, they should buy season tickets and buy more merchandise, probably.
Go buy a jersey, and you can say no Gentry as a name on the back.
Then you guys can say something.
That's actually pretty funny. Buy some merchandise so we can get rid of Gentry.
Fire our coach.
That could be one of the funnier Kickstarter things you could start off.
Let's not do that. We have better ways to spend our money, everybody.
Oh, dear. Okay.
Buy merchandise if you want it, obviously.
I'm probably going to cut off this podcast here, and you'll have a second one posted. The first part of our trade podcast extravaganzas, which will be going up until probably near the trade deadline. So thanks everybody for listening to In the Know, and tune back in for that first part of the trade podcast.